It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This hour is brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States. The original $189 window company. Online at windowworldst.louis.com. I am Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, Ian Geist, Tim Weiland here with me, and now Max Foisy joins us for the Showbiz Show portion of today's festivities.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Max. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing great, and I can't wait to hear your review of The Wall with Matt Damon and Giant Monsters.
No, I thought you were going to do that today. It's not The Great Wall.
Oh, it's not The Great Wall.
No, it's a movie called The Wall.
It's about Trump's border wall that he wants to put up. Oh, it's not? Oh, okay. I'm off base today.
It is one of three movies we have today.
And about Pink Floyd?
You know what? If it had been the Wall with Bob Geldof playing Pink... Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
He did in the movie version of that.
Yes.
Then I would be in a time machine because I think that came out in the 80s.
I know.
He shaved his eyebrows off. It was all very freaky.
Yeah. So since we have three movies and I've seen two of them, why don't I start with The Wall?
Absolutely.
And then we'll get to the bigger ones, which are King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
And Snatch.
And Snatch, the Amy Schumer movie.
Not to be confused with Snatch, which was directed by Guy Ritchie, who directs King Arthur.
What?
Correct. It all comes around. Mm-hmm. It's all just connected. A big circle.
It's all connected. That's time is a flat circle.
Okay. The Wall. Other than American Sniper and perhaps The Hurt Locker, movies about war in Iraq and Afghanistan have not resonated with Americans. The movie-going public has pretty much not been movie-going to these movies. And I don't think The Wall is going to change that. And I don't say that because it's a bad movie. It isn't. But it's because it's about American soldiers who are victims. They're the targets of an unseen enemy sniper. The story takes place in 2007, which is when the Iraq War was supposed to be over. Remember the good old days when the Iraq War was going to be over? It stars John Cena and Aaron Taylor Johnson as a U.S. Army sniper and his spotter.
So you're telling me that a good movie stars a wrestler.
Yeah.
John Cena.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was also in Trainwreck with Amy Schumer.
And he was very funny.
Qualified as a good movie, didn't it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
But he wasn't the lead in that.
Well, let me tell you about this. It starts out with John Cena and Aaron Taylor Johnson as a U.S. Army sniper and his spotter, and they're laying in the bushes overlooking what has been the scene of an ambush. They're trying to find whoever it was who killed some American contractors who were there to build a pipeline in the Iraqi desert and their security guards. All of those people, however, are dead. And Cena and Taylor Johnson are lying on this hill, looking through a sniper scope, trying to figure out where is the person who killed everybody here. And by the way, all the people who are dead of a headshot. So Taylor Johnson says, this is a pro, and we don't know what's going on here. They've been there, camouflaged, in this bush, when the movie starts, for 19 hours. And after all that time, since nothing has happened since then, they think the scene is safe. So John Cena decides to go down the hill and check things out for himself, at least get the radios back.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, see if by chance anybody might still be hanging on to life down there.
It's probably a bad idea.
It is. When he gets down there, he's shot by the sniper, who's also been laying low, but they have no idea where the sniper is. So now that Cena is down, Aaron Taylor Johnson rushes down the hill as well to rescue him, but the sniper gets him in the leg.
Mm.
Can you see why this is not a feel-good American Army movie? Now Taylor Johnson has to hide behind a short, unsteady rock wall, the wall of the movie's title. It's only about 4 feet high. He's got to hide behind that, and he's pinned down. He thinks Cena is dead. And at that point, the movie becomes a psychological battle, because the Iraqi sniper has gotten his hands on one of the victim's radios, and he starts communicating with Taylor Johnson, first pretending to be an American and extracting some information about his location that he can use to ambush more American soldiers as he remains out of sight somewhere. Again, we don't know where he is. He must be in the hill, but we don't know. They don't know. Now, the reason I don't think this is going to draw much of an audience is because Americans don't want to see our service members pinned down behind a wall. They want to be the ones pinning people down behind the wall and then getting behind the wall and killing that person, right?
Right.
In this case, Taylor Johnson's character has very little chance of survival. But it doesn't mean that The Wall is a bad movie. It is a tense thriller that keeps us wondering how he, our hero, is going to get out of this untenable situation. It was directed by Doug Liman, who made the first Bourne movie, The Bourne Identity, which was one of the action movie classics.
Edge of Tomorrow,
he did. He did Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. He also did the non-action but hysterical movie Swingers with John Favreau and Vince Vaughn.
He also did a little scene comedy called Go with Sarah Pauly. And back in 1999, it's a great movie.
Oh, I never even heard of that.
Great movie. It's sort of like a teenage version of Pulp Fiction. Really good stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So Liman keeps us engaged throughout this whole thing, even though for most of this movie, the only person we see on screen is Aaron Taylor Johnson. Scene has been shot. He's lying over there. The Iraqi, we never see. You only hear him through the earpiece. Mm. And we see a character in what the character Aaron Taylor Johnson is playing who is desperate, dehydrated, and has decreasing hopes. That does not sound like the kind of movie most Americans want to go see about their military. When you see guys walking through Lambert Airport or at a ball game and they're wearing a uniform or maybe even camouflage, you know, walking around in whatever they are, they get applause. They're looked upon as heroes. They're looked upon as people who have been through hell. Well, these guys are going through hell. And in particular, this guy is going through hell. And I'm not going to give away the movie here, but it is not the feel-good hit of the summer. Still, I liked it a lot. I give it a 7 out of 10.
It sounds like it might make a pretty compelling stage play. If you only have two characters and a voiceover, you could have The Wall up at our Westport Playhouse here and just have the voiceovers and have a really tense... I mean, for a movie, I'm sure it's claustrophobic. I think for a stage play, it would be even better.
Might work that way. I think it works this way.
Hmm.
So I'm giving The Wall a 7 on a scale of 10.
Wow.
But I expect to do no box office.
When do the monsters come in?
There are no monsters.
Does Matt Damon swoop in with a ponytail and a bone arrow?
No, that's the Great Wall.
It's the Great Wall. It's
different.
It's a great wall.
Very,
different.
Very different. There are also different. No floating pigs from Pink Floyd's The Wall. That does not happen at all.
Come on, that's the best part.
All right, now let's move on to, speaking of monsters, let's move on to the big box office hopeful for this weekend. One of those tentpole movies.
Yes, they have high hopes for this one, and boy, are they going to be dashed.
Yes, they are. It's called King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Can you tell neither of us likes this movie before we even do the review? So
I
just want to admit something about it. I'm going to let you do the bulk of this review.
And then I'm going to apologize to you about something.
Okay. So. I have to admit something about this movie before Max tells you what the movie's about. When Max tells you what this movie is about... I, who have seen the movie, will then know what the movie's about, because I sat there for the whole 2 hours, and I kept thinking to myself, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
From this opening sequence where CGI monsters attack a castle and hundreds of stunt people fall dead all over the place, and then later on there are eel women swimming in the moat underneath a castle. Mm-hmm. Now, we recently had water problems in our basement. Mm. We did not have any eel women down there.
I mean, I hoped for some, but
all of this stuff, I have no... If you put a gun to my head and said, describe this movie, I couldn't tell you the plot. I could tell you what I saw. But can you describe the plot of this movie?
I'm going to do my best, but first I'm going to start with an apology to you. I was sitting behind Paul Harris, and I was a little hungry, so I got some nachos. And I didn't realize that the theater that we saw it in decided to not turn up the speakers at all.
Yeah.
And especially the first half of the movie, after the CG beginning, there's a lot of dialogue. And every crunch that I took with my jalapeno cheesy nachos, I thought, Harris is going to kill me.
No.
I really tried to keep that at a minimum.
No. I did have a note down here that the first half of the movie was awfully crunchy. But that's not your fault.
It was all me. So this is, I believe this movie will go down in history as Death by Committee. I didn't know until the screening that this even had a subtitle. In all the promotional materials I saw, it was King Arthur. Now it's King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Why is that? Because they want this to be a 6-film cinematic universe.
Oh!
Because everything has to be a cinematic universe now, and that's probably how they got the funding. I was listening to a podcast with Guy Ritchie, really talented director. I like Guy Ritchie a lot.
I don't.
You don't. I do. I think Rock and Rolla and Snatch and Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, Sherlock Holmes films. I like his movies a lot.
How about Man from U.N.C.L.E. 2 years ago? One of my worst movies of the year.
Okay. All right. Okay. Calm down. I literally
like nothing this guy's done, including Madonna.
Oh, wow.
Whoa,
getting
Nelly.
Kind of personal there.
Well, they were married, so.
They were. Yeah. He said in a podcast that he signed on to do about a year and a half's worth of work on this. You shoot for 3, 4, 5 months, and then you do the CG stuff, and then he moves on. Well, this turned into a 3-year-long production because they kept adding CG effects. They kept calling him in to say, what do you think about this pre-viz work? And he just didn't care. He lost interest. And I think it's one of those rare movies, while you're watching it, you can see the scenes he cared about that have the Guy Ritchie flourishes and the quick edits and the fast banter, and the scenes he didn't care about, which is the bulk of the film, with the CG monsters and all the really horrible fights, which we'll get into. As far as what the story is, I thought I was relatively familiar with the King Arthur legend. I don't think it's as big here in the States as it must be overseas. I don't know why every 15 or so years we get another one of these. I mean, it was, 2001 that we had the movie King Arthur that Antoine Fuqua did, which had Clive Owen and Keira Knightley. That was more of a war movie. But the reason why we get one every 15 years is because of two words, public domain. So they don't have to pay anybody the rights to use all of these characters.
Okay.
And that's why when this flops, and it will flop, in another 10 or so years, somebody else will try it again. But we don't see the things we think we're going to see. We don't see Merlin. We don't see Lancelot. We don't see Guinevere. We don't really see the Round Table. That's because they want us to watch 5 more of these movies. So what do we get here? Well, we get Excalibur as some sort of Masters of the Universe super sword that can slow down time, almost like the ring in Lord of the Rings. I don't think that was in the original legend. And I'm okay with legends being reinterpreted or reinvented. That's what legends are there for. But my head goes back to Sword in the Stone, the Disney cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
So my version of Arthur is a little kid. He's a boy king. He's trying to figure out how best to lead.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Hunnam, who is from Sons of Anarchy, he just seems too old for me. And I understand that the hero's journey always has the refusal of the call. You always have the hero who goes, I'm no hero. And then, of course, it's standard trope, mm-hmm. and that's fine. But when 90% of your running time is Charlie Hunnam saying, I'm no hero.
Yeah.
We get it.
Right.
You're a hero.
Yes.
Just get on with the heroing.
Yeah, we looked around. You're the one who looks like a hero.
So to answer what the movie is about, I've been delaying this.
Yeah, you haven't gotten to it yet. I still don't know.
I haven't gotten to it. So the movie opens up. You've got Eric Bana, who I think years ago would have made a really great King Arthur. He is the king of this castle, and nameless, faceless hordes are attacking the castle. He has Excalibur, his evil brother, played by Jude Law, who's evil just because, shows up, and they have a battle. Bana sacrifices himself in front of his son. So you got kind of a Batman thing going on there. And actually, I don't think this is too much of a spoiler, becomes the stone that Excalibur is buried in, which is why only his son can take out the sword.
By the way, I just want to say right now, it is a pretty good Cirque du Soleil-like trick to be able to take a sword that big, throw it up in the air straight above you, then bend over and have it come down directly into your spine, knowing you're then going to fall in the water and become the stone, with the sword embedded in you that will remain covered until your son is old enough to extract it.
There's no rhyme or reason.
What did I just say?
Yeah.
Is that the whole story of this thing?
There's no rhyme or reason for any of the magic here.
No, that's not the story.
Oh.
We didn't even get to the eel women yet.
Yeah,
back to you, Max.
You've got Jude Law, who's now in control of the kingdom. Meanwhile, Arthur is raised by a brothel, and he learns how to become a street hustler through them. Not that kind of hustler. He actually is just getting coined. And that's when you have the Guy Ritchie-isms come in. And if you like Guy Ritchie, you're going to be like, oh, okay, here's a breath of fresh air. Here's the quick cuts and the fast-paced banter. This is going to be a pretty fun movie. Then it sinks back under the weird creatures and nondescript magic, and I don't know where any of this comes from. Jude Law descends into this Lovecraftian grotto underneath the castle.
Ooh.
And that's what it reminded me of, but I don't know why the eel women are there. Were they just were they there because they're underneath the castle, or did he summon them there? I don't know. But it turns out he has to spill the blood of someone he loves in order to do something. Now, what is that something? Keep hold of his power? I don't know.
Okay, now let's just stop right there.
What did he accomplish with this?
I'm a dad, and I'm a husband, and I'm not just saying this because it's Mother's Day weekend. If I were to go down to my basement, mm-hmm. and there were a lot of water down there, and swimming around in the water were eel women, mm-hmm. first of all, I'm getting out of there and I'm calling Orkin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Second of all, if the eel women demanded that for me to retain power or even grow my power, mm-hmm. I have to sacrifice my wife and or my daughter,
mm-hmm.
deal's off.
And see,
I'm leaving the basement and never going back down there. I'm calling authorities to come and get the eel women out of the basement.
It's Mother's Day weekend, so I'll say, for me, deal's not off yet. But what I want to know is what I'm getting in exchange.
Yes.
And the movie doesn't really let you know
it does not.
Why Jude Law is doing these atrocities. You don't really know what he stands to gain. So the whole rest of the running time is Arthur saying, I'm no hero, and Jude Law doing horrible things.
Yes.
At the end, they get together in this weird Clash of the Titans, Masters of the Universe, sword and sorcery battle that I don't want to blame the movie for this. It's underlit. It's very dark, but I think we saw a bad screening of it with 3D glasses. Do you think it's that dark?
Yes, I do.
It's a really poorly shot film, too.
Yes.
I think Guy Ritchie lost interest in this. I think I think it's going to lose a whole bunch of money. And some people I'm reading, they're saying, well, this is it. There's not going to be the sixth film Arthur movie. Well, no. What they're going to do is they're going to hire a new director. They're going to recast the whole thing, and it'll all go straight to Netflix. I think there has to be so much invested in this that they'll have the sequel to this just debut on TV one day.
Okay, now you left something out here.
I left a lot out.
Yes, you did.
It's a bad movie.
I still don't understand the plot and what the hell's going on most of the time. I also don't understand the flashbacks that are there. Usually when you include flashbacks in a story, they are there to reveal some of the backstory and explain what is about to happen or why something that happened actually happened. These flashbacks not only reveal little, but there are times in this movie where the flashbacks are on the screen at the same time as the live current action. You can't do that.
I don't know why Excalibur is a magical sword. I don't know why Arthur should be the king. Why is he worthy of being the king? I don't really know why Jude Law is doing anything that he's doing. They have they don't have Merlin here, but they mention Merlin, so whatever. They have a young lady who's a mage, is what they call her. I'm a mage. She's a witch, basically. They make her part of their party.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Okay. Because she's just there, and I'm like, oh, that's the girl from the recent Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
She has some sort of connection with the animals, like Sheena, Queen of the Jungle.
Or like the Beastmaster.
Which, by the way, I'm going to go back and watch Tanya Roberts as Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, because it's a better movie than this.
This is a very bad movie.
It's very, 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 very bad. It's confusing. You don't know what's going on. It's poorly lit. The result of the editing, you liked it. I think that there are a couple of times in here where there are 100 cuts a minute, which means in a battle scene or even a fight between two people, you can't see actually what's going on
because he edits
away from the action.
The fight scenes are horribly staged. I was talking more about the banter scenes early on, which again is like a hallmark of what Guy Ritchie does. So I think had this movie had more of a Guy Ritchie influence as far as his personality, it might have not taken itself so seriously, and it could have possibly been better, but we're not here to say
I think
if the movie could have been better. As it is, it's horrible.
I think you're giving him too much credit. As a non-Guy Ritchie fan,
though,
I think that he put everything he has into this movie and made the kind of crap that he's made before.
By the way,
The Man from U.N.C.L.E. was supposed to be the start of a franchise thing, too, and that bombed so much, it will not be.
Well, I don't know. I was just hearing that Armie Hammer says that there's going to be a sequel. So happy Christmas.
I want to add one more thing. We didn't even mention the giant snake that appears out of nowhere for no reason.
Oh, wait. Yes, we have to talk about this. The giant snake is great because I think it's the magician, the mage, who makes a giant snake appear to take on Jude Law's minions. So, of course, the second this happens, there's this weird subplot about how there were a bunch of magicians, but the kingdom, like, drove them back or was fighting with them. If you can summon a giant snake.
That was in the movie?
I think it's at the very beginning. And that's why the magicians don't want to help them or something. They're like,
there are magicians in this movie?
Apparently, there was a bunch, but they all got driven away. But I'm thinking, if you can summon a giant snake, you win.
What instruments do they play?
We don't know. Nothing is clear in this movie. By the way, if the giant snake came and ate Chris Angel, now you got a movie with a snake and an angel and a magician, and I'm in.
Is this a true story?
Based on.
Yeah.
Based on.
Okay.
If you want to see a good King Arthur movie, Go back and watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yes.
There's a classic.
With the coconuts. And
yes.
Sword in the Stone with Madame Mim and Archimedes the Owl. That's good stuff.
Scale of 1 to 10, what do you give it?
I will give this movie a 1.
Whoa.
And the reason why I'm giving it a 1 instead of like a no stars or a 0 because I hate it so much.
We don't give zeros. It's 1 to 10.
Well, then, so I can't give a 0.
Correct.
Ever in the, okay, well, then I give it a 2 then. I give it one step up from the lowest score.
Oh, you
score.
Do?
I'm giving it the one step up from the lowest. I was thinking 0 was the lowest.
Okay.
So I'll give it a 2.
All right. I'm giving it a 1.
Okay.
The only person who is going to be happy about this movie is Robert De Niro. Because it's now possible that he will not have the worst movie of the year on my end of the year list with The Comedian.
Nice.
It's going to be King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
So what you're saying is I should see the Comedian with Robert De Niro. Okay.
No, I'm not
all
saying
right. Thanks
that.
For the recommendation,
no,
Paul.
No. They both get a 1. This one just gets like a 1 minus. I don't know how you can do that on a scale of 1 to 10. They are both 1s. Now, we have one more movie that's opening up this weekend for Mother's Day. It is called Snatched with Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn, and I'll tell you about that right after this on the Big 550 KTRS. As we continue along with the showbiz stuff here on the Big 550 KTRS, Max and I just gave very, very low ratings to King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. I gave it a 1. He gave it a 2. This is on a scale of 10.
What is the Legend of the Sword?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's not explained in the movie.
It's not.
It flies in the air and goes in the guy's spine.
That's
legend.
And it slows down time? Why does it do that?
Why does it glow? I've never seen a sword that glows in a non-animated movie.
Also, Charlie Hunnam, he takes the sword out of the stone, right?
Yeah.
And then promptly goes, eh. It's a major moment. You're king now, right? And he's like, eh.
I know. Before that, I gave a 7 out of 10 to a movie called The Wall, which is also opening this weekend. And our third movie to talk about today is Snatched. This is the new movie starring Amy Schumer. Are you an Amy Schumer fan?
I'm indifferent. You know, her stand-up comedy and her show Inside Amy Schumer doesn't do a lot for me. Okay. I did enjoy Trainwreck. Uh-huh. That might have been Judd Apatow's influence. I don't know.
Okay.
So I'm excited. I mean, you know, I'm here. You know, here and there.
I loved her TV show for the most part. You know, comedy every week. Tough to do for anybody. Even Key and Peele didn't have a great half hour every week.
Who I do like though is her co-star here,
Goldie Hawn.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that in a second. I also liked some of Amy Schumer's earlier stand-up work, although her latest Netflix special, which just came out about a month and a half ago, is terrible.
That's what I've heard.
Even though you already have it included in your Netflix subscription, don't bother.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
I've heard it's pretty bad.
Okay, so in Snatched, Amy plays, surprise, an irresponsible, self-absorbed woman. This is the Amy Schumer character.
Acting?
That she's created. That's right. It's the kind of a woman who takes 100 selfies a day and posts them online because she needs that love from strangers.
Oh, like most of America then.
Yes. This character boyfriend breaks up with her just before they're going to take a non-refundable trip to Honduras together. And since none of Amy's friends will go with her, she recruits her mother, who is played by Goldie Hawn. Again, this is Mother's Day weekend. This is your Mother's Day movie with a little raunch thrown in. Now, Goldie Hawn hasn't made a movie in a decade and a half, and her last one was The Banger Sisters.
Right.
Which was
really, Susan Sarandon.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Which was not a good way to end the Goldie Hawn legacy. This movie is a better way to end it, I think. Well, we'll get along here. Get to that point in a moment. Goldie Hawn, her character, Amy Schumer's mom, is a homebody who's kind of afraid of the rest of the world. She just wants to stay in her house with her cats and her locked doors and her grown son. But Schumer convinces her to go along to Honduras, and pretty soon they're on the beach down there. Schumer is laying out in the sun, getting a tan in her bikini and having drink after drink after drink. And Goldie comes along, and she's completely covered up. There's a good little old-time movie joke in there where Goldie Hawn says, "Mom, why are you dressed like powder?" You remember that character?
Yes.
The albino?
Yes. Yeah.
So she's completely worried about skin cancer and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Soon, Amy Schumer meets a good-looking British guy at the bar, and they go off for the evening, and they have a good time, and they make plans to get together again the next day where he's going to take her, and she convinces her mom to go along with them as they go on some adventure in the jungle. Hmm. And before they know it, they've been kidnapped.
They've been snatched.
Snatched, exactly right. And it turns into a buddies on the run comedy, which is fine. This is a formula we've seen a thousand times before in other movies.
Seeing the trailer, it makes me feel like the kind of movie I want to see Goldie Hawn in.
Yes.
I want to see hijinks, and she's a great instigator of said hijinks.
Well, she doesn't instigate them. She's kind of the reactor to them. But she does come out of her shell a little bit. After all, she literally lived in a shell in her house. Well, that would be figuratively. She figuratively lived in a shell in her house, but now she is coming out of it a little bit more and has to, along with her daughter, figure out how do we get away from these kidnappers. And their adventure begins. I don't really want to give much of this away, except you know that when Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn are the stars, they're not going to end up dead.
Well, no, you don't want to see that.
Okay. I will tell you, there are a few corpses along the way.
Is there a sniper involved in there?
There's no sniper. No, there's none.
Is there a sword that glows and slows down time?
There is. Is there a snake that comes out of nowhere?
Oh,
no, there isn't.
Giant snake? No, okay.
Although there is a scene with a tapeworm.
A tapeworm.
Yes.
Whoa, you don't see too many of those in movies.
No, and it's actually quite funny. It's one of the set pieces in this movie that's quite funny. There are also supporting roles for Wanda Sykes and Joan Cusack. The two of them steal every scene they're in. You're stealing scenes from Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn. They're hysterical. They are fellow Americans on vacation. Joan Cusack's character is a former Navy SEAL who cut her tongue out so she would never be forced to talk about what her experiences were.
Wow.
So she's mute in the movie.
That's awesome.
Which is okay because Wanda Sykes is so verbal about everything.
Yeah.
It works. It's like a Penn and Teller kind of thing.
Great.
One talks all the time, the other one doesn't. You also have Christopher Maloney in this movie who tries to help out Schumer and Hawn. He acts like Michael Douglas in Romancing the Stone, except without the skills that Michael Douglas has. This movie was written by a woman named Katie Dippold, who worked on The Heat with Melissa McCarthy and the Ghostbusters reboot with Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig and Kate McKinnon.
I wonder if this was
Leslie
a vehicle
Jones.
For Melissa McCarthy once upon a time. I wonder.
That's a good question. I will tell you, this one follows along with some of the same comic rhythms of those earlier movies. The director, Jonathan Levine, keeps things moving and doesn't let the action get in the way of the ridiculous situations that they find themselves in, and there are funny things going on along the way.
You know, I didn't peg him for the director for a project like this because he's made some sort of semi-serious movies like 50-50, which had some comedic elements. That was the Seth Rogen cancer movie.
With Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and Anna Kendrick.
Yes, that was
very
good.
I gave that a 5.
Because he was 50-50 in there, see?
It's Mother's Day weekend. Can listeners right now take their mom? I mean, I'm sure it depends on the mom.
It depends on your mom. Okay. If your mom is the kind of mom who would enjoy Amy Schumer humor, then I would say definitely
Schumer
take
humor.
Her. And by the way, let me say this about Goldie Hawn, who is now 71 years old.
Wow.
That means she's been... how old must she have been when she was on Laugh-In?
She was
20?
Like I think she was 19. She was very young.
So that was 50-plus years ago.
Wow. Yeah.
She still has the comedic chops. She doesn't still have the Goldie Hawn young woman face.
You're 71.
Well, let me just say there has been some Botox involved in that. But it's fine. She looks fine. She's having a blast working with Amy Schumer. That's apparent. Mm.
Didn't he play football and baseball at one time?
Who?
Botox.
Yeah. I remember those commercials. Okay. Bo Nose Tox.
Yeah.
Very good, Dan. Let me say this. In 2015, I said that Amy Schumer's Trainwreck was the funniest movie of the year. This is not that good. But I think it is worth your time, especially considering there are not many decent comedies coming around the box office anymore.
Is it the funniest movie of the year so far?
Well, what else might beat it? What else qualified as a comedy this year?
Lego Batman, maybe? I can't think of anything else.
No.
That wasn't a comedy, you don't think?
Well, I didn't see it.
Oh, okay.
But I'm talking about non-animated.
You had such a strong reaction for something you hadn't seen.
Because it's the kind
of
movie.
Get it out of here, Boise! Well, get that Lego thing out of here!
That's the attitude I have towards that kind of
a
movie.
Apparently. You hate Legos. I didn't realize this.
But I mean, we've been reviewing movies together for a couple months now. I can't remember a comedy that came along that we would actually say, wow,
no,
that was funny.
No.
There are
right.
parts of this that are actually funny, but you have to like her. Yeah. If you don't like Amy Schumer, don't go see this movie and expect to be surprised.
Now, if you're more like me and you tolerate Amy Schumer, but you like Goldie Hawn, am I going to be won over by this movie? Would it make me a bigger fan of Schumer?
Maybe. Maybe. I give it a 7 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it's worthwhile. And I think it's going to be a hit. And I think a lot of people are going to go see this movie and have a good time.
I think you're right. I think it's going to be the breakout hit over the weekend, and I don't think people originally thought it was going to be. I think that people months ago said, well, King Arthur, and it's going to be gigantic. Well,
no.
That's going to bomb hugely, and yes. I think Mother's Day weekend, people are going to go see this.
Yeah, I hope so.
What was the movie that came out with Melissa McCarthy and Susan Sarandon?
Tammy.
Oh, horrible. That was my worst movie that year.
But that came out around Mother's Day, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it did.
They're
right.
So bad.
You're right.
So bad.
Speaking of Melissa McCarthy, she's hosting SNL tomorrow night, and there's video online today of her shooting a sequence as Sean Spicer, the presidential press secretary, behind the podium, which she's driving through traffic in New York.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
It's pretty funny, isn't it?
It's pretty funny.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great clip.
Yeah. So that's there's also a promo that they have online of her while you hear the song I Feel Pretty from West Side Story. She's dancing around as Melissa McCarthy in a pretty dress, and she's dancing through the hallways. Then she goes into makeup, and they turn her into Sean Spicer.
Nice.
And the song is still playing. I Feel Pretty. It's pretty good. Speaking of TV, I want to mention one thing before we go here today. This was the week where the networks decided what their new shows are going to be for the fall and what shows are on the air or have been on the air that are not coming back in the fall. And I saw this list and I realized I've never even heard of most of these shows. ABC has canceled Notorious.
No idea.
No idea. Last Man Standing.
Nope.
Time After Time.
That's the H.G. Wells thing. I did know that one.
Conviction.
Nope.
Dr. Ken. I know that's a comedy with the guy from The Hangover.
Ken Jeong.
Ken Jeong, yeah.
Oh.
Imaginary Mary.
Okay.
American Crime. I had heard of that. Secrets and Lies, The Catch, and The Real O'Neills. Those are all shows that were on one network. We've never heard of them.
Nope. Now, wait, they're canceling them?
Yes.
Now, Last Man Standing, that's the one with Tim...
Oh, Allen. Tim Allen?
Yeah, Tim Allen. My wife loves that show. Records it every
week.
Well,
you got bad news for your wife.
Yeah, I know. Oh. Don't get her.
Won't be the last time Tim's gone home at night and after the show.
Yeah, right.
His wife's been disappointed. I was actually a little bit upset that the show Pitch has been canceled. That's the one about the female baseball pitcher that was on Fox. That's gone. Fox also canceled a show called APB, another one called Making History, Rosewood, Sleepy Hollow, and Son of Zorn.
I'm a little surprised about Sleepy Hollow. I never watched it, but it was on for a couple of years.
Son of Zorn was a TV show. NBC has canceled Emerald City, Grimm, that's the fairy tale one.
Yep.
Timeless, which I think was on for one season, and Powerless.
So Timeless actually was timed.
And Powerless had no power.
Mm-hmm.
And today I think they're announcing that The Apprentice won't be back, which is a complete shock to no one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they said that before, too.
Well, they canceled it the first time around when it was a Celebrity Apprentice, and this time it was Arnold Schwarzenegger. You're terminated.
American Idol is coming back, but not to Fox. ABC picked it up.
Yeah,
I read that.
Yeah, and their plan was to get Kelly Clarkson and Jennifer Hudson, the two biggest people they've had from that show, to be judges, and they reached out to them, and Clarkson and Hudson's reps said, oh, we're actually both booked to be on The Voice.
Oh,
boom!
They are?
Wow.
Yes. They're going to be judges on The Voice over the next couple of years.
Wow.
Man.
CBS has canceled Doubt and Pure Genius. The CW canceled Frequency and No Tomorrow. The USA Network canceled Eyewitness. Sci-Fi canceled Incorporated. Cinemax canceled The Nick. That was a Steven Soderbergh show. The CW canceled Frequency and No Tomorrow. WGN America had a show called The Outsiders. I didn't even know there was a channel, WGN America, let alone the show. I never heard of the channel. And FXX canceled Man Seeking Women. So those shows all gone that we didn't even know had arrived.
Tim's wife loves all of those shows, though. I feel really bad for her.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Sorry about that, Mrs. Tim. That's all the showbiz time we have for this week. Next hour, the Harris Challenge, which will include some Mother's Day trivia, of course, and some Mother's Day punishment music as well. That plus Mike Evans and Knuckleheads in the News, all ahead here on the Big 550 KTRS.